Harry led them all back into the kitchen, where, laughing and chattering, they settled on chairs, sat themselves upon Aunt Petunia's gleaming work surfaces, or leaned up against her spotless appliances. Ron, long and lanky, Hermione, her bushy hair tied back in a long plait, Fred and George, grinning identically, Bill, badly scarred and long-haired, Mr. Weasley, kind-faced, balding, his spectacles a little awry, Mad-Eye, battle-worn, one-legged, his bright blue magical eye whizzing in its socket, Tonks, whose short hair was her favourite shade of bright pink, Lupin, greyer, more lined, Fleur, slender and beautiful, with her long silvery blonde hair, Kingsley, bald, black, broad-shouldered, Hagrid, with his wild hair and beard, standing hunchbacked to avoid hitting his head on the ceiling, and Mundungus Fletcher, small, dirty, and hangdog, with his droopy basset hound's eyes and matted hair. Harry's heart seemed to expand and glow at the sight. He felt incredibly fond of all of them, even Mundungus, whom he had tried to strangle the last time they had met. "Kingsley, I thought you were looking after the Muggle Prime Minister," he called across the room.
"He can get along without me for one night," said Kingsley. "You're more important."
"Harry, guess what?"
said Tonks from her perch on top of the washing machine, and she wiggled her left hand at him. A ring glittered there.
"You got married," Harry yelped, looking from her to Lupin. "I'm sorry you couldn't be there, Harry. It was very quiet."
"That's brilliant. Congrats."
All right, we'll have time for a cosy catch-up later,"
roared Moody over the hubbub, and silence fell in the kitchen. Moody dropped his sacks at his feet and turned to Harry.
"As Daedalus probably told you, we had to abandon Plan A. Pyre's thickness has gone over, which gives us a big problem. He's made it an imprisonable offence to connect this house to the flu network. Place a port key here or apparate in or out. All done in the name of your protection to prevent you-know-who getting in at you. Absolutely pointless, seeing as your mother's charm does that already. What he's really done is to stop you getting out of here safely. Second problem, you're underage, which means you've still got the trace on you.
I don't..."
The trace, said Mad-Eye impatiently. "The charm that detects magical activity around under-17s, the way the Ministry finds out about underage magic. If you or anyone around you casts a spell to get you out of here, Thickness is going to know about it, and so will the Death Eaters. We can't wait for the trace to break, because the moment you turn 17, you'll lose all the protection your mother gave you. In short, Pyre's Thickness thinks he's got you cornered good and proper."
Harry could not help but agree with the unknown Thickness. "So, what are we going to do?"
"We're going to use the only means of transport left to us, the only ones the trace can't detect, because we don't need to cast spells to use them. Brooms, thestrals, and Hagrid's motorbike."
Harry could see flaws in this plan, however, he held his tongue to give Mad-Eye the chance to address them.
"Now, your mother's charm will only break under two conditions. When you come of age, or..."
Moody gestured around the pristine kitchen.
"You no longer call this place home. You and your aunt and uncle are going your separate ways tonight, in the full understanding that you're never going to live together again, correct?"
Harry nodded.
"So this time, when you leave, there'll be no going back, and the charm will break the moment you get outside its range. We're choosing to break it early, because the alternative is waiting for you-know-who to come and seize you the moment you turn 17.